You are listening to the Post-Atomic Horror Podcast with Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham. Episode 70, covering Measure of a Man and The Dauphine, with special guest Mark Bosco.
Hello, friends. We're back.
We are back.
Bob is with us this week.
Hello.
And we're doing the episode that we've been teasing for months and months because we've seen it on the horizon. We've been telling ourselves there's a great episode coming. We know it. We can get through the outrageous Okana because this episode's coming, and now it's here.
Woohoo!
Yay. So without further delay, we had a bit of a mix-up at first, actually. Bob wanted to be here for this episode, but he wanted to summarize the other one, and he very graciously at the last second said, well, okay, I didn't want to summarize this one, but I will. I think you were worried you were going to cry, because it's a very,
yes.
You know, and that's why I didn't want to do it, too. Yeah, no, that's not a dig at you, it's just, it's a very, what's the word? Tear-inducing? No.
It's an emotional episode.
Emotional?
That was a better word, but I've lost it. It doesn't matter. Bob, why don't you tell us about Measure of a Man? Why don't you measure a man for us?
I will do that measuring.
All right.
So, Data joins the officer's first poker game, and Riker fluffs some pigeons. Later, Admiral Marita brings aboard Commander Bruce Maddox, who wants to see what makes Data tick, even if it means stealing him away to a research starbase. Picard goes to his old flame, the local JAG officer, to stop the process. She suggests that Data could always resign, so Data starts packing. Maddox, however, argues that Data is Starfleet property, so he can't resign. Picard and Riker go back to Mrs. JAG to challenge that idea. Unfortunately, she's the only person in her new office, so there's no one to prosecute the case, a task which now falls to Senior Officer Riker. So Riker goes off to do his research and finds a great way to argue his case that makes him really happy and depressed at the same time. So, on to the hearing. Riker asks Data what he is, about his storage capacity and operational speed. He asks him to bend a bar of steel. He pulls off his hand. Picard objects a lot. Then Riker turns Data off and calls him Pinocchio. What a dick. Picard calls for a recess. Whee! And goes to drown his sorrows at the bar. And goes to drown his sorrows at the bar, where Guinan reminds him that it's not just about Data, but about a potential whole race of, quote, disposable creatures who do the dirty work. So Picard comes back fighting. Does Data pass the three tests for sentience? Maddox wants to make more, as many as are needed. Will they be slaves or free individuals? Thank goodness the JAG lady has some sense and rules in Data's favor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Something
it's
in your
beautiful.
Eye?
Yep.
I think the only main character who didn't get something in their eye is Geordi, and that's just because, you know, his
there's
eyes.
Already something in his eye.
Right, exactly. No, this, as we have hinted before, as I mentioned, the first great episode, what's weird is there's no real action. Like, there's no physical action. It's all
it's
intellectual
like
stuff.
Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all arguments. It's all just, you know, mostly people in a room arguing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's easily, like, the best episode.
Oh, yeah,
so
and it's like, stuff. When we get to the end of all 178 or whatever it is, like, this will probably be in my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good it is.
I think this is, like, the first really great episode.
Yeah, we've had a few in season 2 that are quite good, but this one's by far one of the best. And it still operates in Gene's sort of very narrow, we have to do things without conflict, we have to, you know, like, nobody's really evil, nobody's corrupt, everyone has a valid viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a nice bit of conflict there regardless. Like, they're working within his really narrow confines and still making it work.
Yeah, like, even Maddox as the bad guy isn't, you know, a bad guy. He's just kind of a dick.
No, he has a valid standpoint. It's just,
it's
flawed, and it's obviously it's not what we want.
No, but, like, he's completely justified in wanting to, like, help Starfleet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So, Bob, your good thing, bad thing?
Good thing. I don't know, the whole thing. I especially love that Data is interested in helping Maddox even after all of this. Like, at the end, he's like, okay, you know, even though they ruled my favor, well, you know, Maddox, if you know, your research advances and you want some more information or help, you know, let me know.
Yeah, and there's a great callback later on where we find out that Data's been sort of writing letters to him. Like, Maddox gets the opportunity to study what Data's typical days are like and how things work. And, you know, I think that's really cool that yeah. that turns into a thing.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things to me was that one of the reasons Maddox sort of ends up losing is because he's not very good at it.
No, he's not. He's not a great arguer.
Oh, no, not even that. He's not a good cyberneticist.
Yeah.
Like, Data's no, main concern true. Is, you're going to take me apart and not be able to put me back together. And that's the central, like, I wonder how this would have unfolded had Maddox's character been someone who is entirely competent and
like
totally
competent
capable
scientist.
Of building an army of Data's.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Like, I think that might have been sort of a requirement of the of the episode.
Like then, Data would have just gone along, and we never would have gotten this argument about.
I think so, yeah.
First place.
Yeah, and then we'd have like ships of androids crewing
well,
around.
Well, like you say, there's Data sort of approaches it like a scientist. Like what you know, a lot of what you say is sound.
Right.
I should be studied. You're right. And until it comes down to a challenge to his, you know, personal liberty, he's mm-hmm. all on board with it, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
And your bad thing.
The bad thing is, there's very little for me to find bad here, except that it seems like in a few lines that Maddox has, they take the easy way out and trying to frame him as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's like one line during the hearing, he's like, rights, I'm sick of hearing about rights. Like, you know, some you know, dictator that's like, people.
If you're saying sentences like that, it's very clear you're not the good guy in this equation.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think it, that sort of feeds back to what I was saying. They set him up as sort of the straw man, as sort of the bad, like, I don't know, if he'd been more sensible and better at his job, I think you wouldn't have had a case here. Like, they had to make him flawed or else this, I don't know, the argument wouldn't have been strong enough for them to win.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Show how he was overreaching and
right.
you know, didn't quite have his ducks in a row.
I always love the bureaucrat as a bad guy, though.
Yeah.
I actually like the bureaucrat as a good guy. I love, like, the action bureaucrat character, like Agent
Coulson. Action bureaucrat comes with everything you see here.
Well, like Agent Coulson from the Marvel movies.
Yes.
Total action bureaucrat. Or, like, another comic book example, Amanda Waller from, the Justice League cartoon. And
oh, yeah, she
also
rocks.
From the comics, but also action bureaucrat. And, you know, so they can be good guys, too, but I like, you know... I like when the enemy is sort of, well, this guy's not breaking any rules. The enemy is Starfleet. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matt, what about you? Good thing, bad thing?
Again, whole episode is absolutely fantastic, but my good thing is Picard's defensive Data speech.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is that you want to sum up Picard's character right there. Like, that's everything you need to know. That's Picard.
Yep.
It's how he's different than Kirk. It's how he's just as good, if not better than Kirk.
Yeah, I really wish we could have gotten one of his great sort of moral high ground speeches in the pilot as opposed to the first thing he does is surrender. Because you're absolutely right. This is totally Picard in a nutshell, and it's the Picard we all remember being fans of the whole series.
Like, Patrick Stewart as an actor fucking shines in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Just the entire thing. He just is amazing.
Yeah, and there's a few instances where he's on one side, and then he's sort of no, and then he's convinced, and then he plays the indecisiveness and being in this very difficult situation very well, and then the speeches. And what's cool is this season, this is all coming together because I think it was the previous episode, the Klingon episode, Riker. That was a definitive Riker as a character episode.
Right.
And now he's fallen into place, and now Picard has totally fallen into it. Like, we're finally figuring out what these characters really are all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Which is great.
We get to that morally indignant Picard that we all know and love.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite Picard, where, you know, his speeches, the first duty of every Starfleet, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And your bad thing?
I really hated Maddox. I mean... I guess you're supposed to. It's not so, like, it's not even really a bad thing. I just hate irritating guys in blue shirts that feel the need to be mean to Data.
Yeah, you do. No, that's fair. I mean, again, he was, I think, meant to be hateable, but...
Yeah, I would actually almost like to see them have done this episode with him as a perfectly, like, none of his, like, rights, I don't... he's a box and it doesn't matter. Like, if they played him as, like, a relatable character and didn't have to, you know, feel the need to make him, you know, even slightly villainous, I would be interested. I'd be interested to see how this episode went.
Yeah, I don't know. I think part of, like, some of the drama sort of hinges on the fact that, he is making flawed arguments. And, you know, I think they had to make some of those concessions for the story. Some of it might have just been shortcuts.
I was actually really surprised that Pulaski doesn't feature in any of the court case. I just assumed that this was, like, her big turnaround on Data thing, and she doesn't really show up that much.
No, she, but she's in it, too. It's not...
I mean, because, no, she is in it, but,
which,
like,
is weird, because, you know, sometimes she couldn't be, and it, that would make sense if they didn't really put her in it, because, you know, she wasn't available, but...
Yeah.
But yeah. Apparently she's really good at poker, though.
Oh, yeah. Now, I would have loved to have seen her, like, argue against Data being a...
Well, and she's, by rank, I think, a commander.
Yeah.
So she could have taken, you know, Riker's spot.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah, but I really like the, dramatic... Like, we'll get to that in a sec. My good thing was the introduction of the poker game. Well, I mean, my good thing was the whole thing, like everybody else. But, you know, the poker game, is it turns into a running thing. And what's cool is, here, it could just be a one-off thing. It's one joke, which is Data has studied poker. He knows everything about poker. He's going to win. And then he doesn't. And that's the joke. And the end.
Yeah.
And then we get to see Riker's poker face. Poker face.
And the thing about that is, that's very Roddenberry as well, in a good way. Like, the, you know, you're missing the vital human equation. Like, the whole thing about this game is, yes, skill, but also emotions and reading other people's emotions. And, you know, it's a very human game. And I like that they managed to, like I say, it should just be a one-joke premise, but they managed to bring it back over and over, and it turns into a great way to show that they're friends, show what they do in their time off, and also just do some nice character stuff. And it's too bad that O'Brien doesn't show up there a lot, because I think this is the only time I can remember actually seeing him there.
Yeah, it's usually an officer's game, right? And he's an enlisted man.
So. Yeah, exactly. But they let Wesley in sometimes, and while he is an officer, he's a junior officer.
They're just, like, fleecing him of all his money.
That's right.
For all
my
his
allowance.
Non-existent money. Yes. My bad thing, again, very difficult to find. I'm actually going with something that Matt pointed out, which was there is a bit of a conflict of interests in... well, Picard has a romantic history with the JAG officer. Matt's joke, not mine.
Pippi Longstocking?
Yeah,
yes,
Pippi Longstocking.
What is it? Philippa. Terrence Philippa. That's her. No, and they talk about this. She presided over the inquiry after Picard lost the Stargazer, which is a great way to tie in continuity, because that did happen, and it was a big deal, and there should have been an inquiry. He didn't just lose a ship and go on his way.
Whoops.
Yeah, they made a big deal out of it. And also, they apparently have a romantic history. So right there, that's a conflict of interest. But then, obviously, putting Riker in the spot of having to prosecute, you know, Data, a friend, an officer he served with, you know, that's another conflict of interest. And I understand the station is shorthanded, and they don't
extremely
have a lot of
shorthanded
senior officers, and they needed, you know, somebody of rank.
There's only five people in the station.
Yeah.
Right.
See, and you know, that sounds funny, but really, I believe a lot of these stations out in deep space probably are not very well manned. Like, ships come and refuel and whatever.
There's got to be tons of people there. The station's, like, bigger than the Enterprise.
Yeah, but it's designed for, like, guys to come and have shore leave. Like, you know, there's a lot of room so that the Enterprise can empty out and people can go, I don't know, do their thing. I don't know. That's how I always imagined
it. I feel like there's probably a lot of, like, ones that are busy, like DS9, if it's, like, a high... if it's a high traffic area.
Yeah, but the thing is, before the wormhole, DS9 would have been empty.
No, that's what I'm saying. But, like, there's, you know, and you've got ones that have, like, you know, labs. There's probably some defensive ones set up, like, along the neutral zone.
Yeah, I picture them like fortresses out on the, you know, out on the frontier, like, in Western times.
But, like, this one is just, like, you know, fucking six people just maintaining the place.
Right. But anyway, the whole conflict of interest thing, like, I do think that's a little sketchy. However, the drama that it sets up, putting Riker in that position, totally makes up for that, because it gives Frakes a chance, and he pulls off some great acting too. Like, you mentioned Patrick Stewart, but Frakes has a lot of great moments where he's like, like you pointed out in your summary, Bob, where yay, I can beat Data. Oh, I can beat Data. And he doesn't say anything. It's all in his face. And he just does some great sort of subtle, like, well, I'm doing what I was told, but I don't like it. We've said it many times before, but it bears repeating. We love Riker.
Yep. Oh, yeah. He's not always very subtle, but he's still enjoyable.
Yeah. No, that's what I like. He's not subtle all the time. Mm-hmm. He's a very direct guy.
As we'll see in the next episode.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's really to this episode's credit that, you know, five guys in a room arguing makes up a large portion of the episode, and it's still just compelling. It's quintessential Star Trek. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with sort of big issues, but at the same time, it's very personal with the characters. Like, it covers all the stuff that it needs to cover. It's fantastic. And it's hard to believe that this is only season two. Like, this really feels like this should be a season three or four episode. Mm-hmm. And everything just comes together really well.
Yep. No, it's a fantastic episode.
And I think it does a really good job of getting our sympathies. Like, I imagine some people in the audience, like, first you got the fans of the original series who were like, oh, this isn't the same. This isn't as good. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, like, he's not. That's weird. Your daughter's what, like 11, 12, something like that?
My daughter is 13.
Oh, now. God.
Yeah. But she was totally in love with Spock. And then she was like, I don't want to try Next Generation. And then eventually I got her to try it. And then she fell in love with Data.
But see, I can see people early in the series thinking, oh, he's not Spock. He's not even human. And then this episode really, while Data, you know, is the focus of it, he's not really a big part of it, like, acting-wise. You know, like, it's mostly a Picard and Riker story.
Yeah.
But it really gets your sympathies with Data. Like, if you were not really won over by the character, by the end of this episode, you are. Mm-hmm. Right. Because they make a really good case for, no, don't let the bad man take him off. I like him.
He's my robot buddy.
And there's a great scene between him and Geordi. Where Geordi's just like, well, I don't want to say goodbye. I don't want you to leave.
Geordi's just moping around.
Yeah.
I hang out
in his
with
dark room.
Wesley, I guess.
Ugh. Oh, man. Come on. No.
What about Worf? Worf kind of scares me.
Worf scares everybody, honey. No, and this also is the episode where Matt was finally won over by Guinan, which is nice.
That continues into the next episode, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She, like we've said before, she does a lot of what Troy should be doing, mm-hmm. which is being people's conscience and sort of provoking them into solving their own problems and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And although, Bob, you did make a good observation on that front.
Mm. And slavery is bad, y'all.
Well, yeah. I guess it was important for her to have... For her to deliver that instead of a white person.
I also like that argument when they're like... When they're talking about how it's not just about the episode suddenly becomes not just about, well, you know, what
the rights of this one individual.
But, it suddenly becomes the rights of, like, this potential race of people.
Yep.
And, like, is Starfleet going to be okay with having robots that can push around?
Yeah. Plus, you know, surely they've seen stories about, you know, robots turning against their creators, so.
No, mm-hmm. We'll just stick in the three laws in there. We'll be fine.
Oh.
They don't have any dystopian stories in the Star Trek future.
Only
Roddenberry doesn't believe in them.
Yes.
But going back a sec, Bob, what you had pointed out was that the reason people talk to Guinan, the reason she's better at it, is that nobody wants to talk to Troy because it's her job.
Right, exactly. I mean, exactly. They have to go and talk to her sometimes for evaluations and things like that. So they don't want to just go and chat with her.
Right.
But, you know, you can go and talk to the bartender because she's not going to report whatever your neuroses are to Starfleet.
Yeah. Plus, how irritating has it got to be to go into Troy's office and have her go, I sense you are in great pain. Oh, do you?
Whereas Guinan's like, here, have a drink.
What you doing?
That is a bit more inviting. What else? I mean, there's a lot to say about this episode, but mostly it's just going to be us going, this is great! Like, is there really any more major points? Or
written by Melinda M. Snodgrass, by the way.
Yeah, she was
the best name ever.
One of the main contributors for a while, as I recall.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for her.
You'll see her now. She might have become a producer, like, in a later season. Like, you'll see that name a lot, I know. Mm.
Oh, there is one thing. My daughter reviewed this episode with me when I was writing the summary, and she commented at the end, it's like, Riker looks just like you.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Apparently. All right.
So maybe I'll dress as Riker for the Comic-Con.
That'd be great. I mean, I haven't seen you since you came out for the wedding, so maybe you look like Riker now, but I don't really see it, like, in my mind's eye, but who knows?
I don't know. I can pretend.
and as well you should. That I can't think of much better things for your daughter to say to you, actually. Unless you were just, like, sitting on a chair backwards or something like that. You know, that doesn't count. All right. Any further business? Or?
Oh, yeah. Maddox has had this great, like, tick throughout the episode where he very rarely would look at Data when he talked to him.
Oh, yeah.
He only ever referred to him as it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's this big deal that he, you know, they convince him that Data's a real person and he starts calling him.
Well, yeah, it's a nice 12 Angry Men moment where.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gradually won over the course of the arguments.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I really dug that. I just wish they hadn't felt the need to draw attention to it.
Yeah, they did sort of, you called him.
Hey!
I see
dramatics are becoming more human every day.
They didn't need to clobber us over the head with it. You're right. But,
Thank you, Bob.
All right,
laugh on the bridge music.
Yes, of course. Put your hands on your hips. Throw your head back.
Put your hands in the air like you just don't care.
Do the bridge laugh. All right, Bob, you got a quote for us?
Yeah, it's a bit of a spoiler if you want to sound the spoiler horn. But the
do we have that?
Oh,
we should
no,
get
that's
one.
A different podcast. Sorry.
Okay.
The bit of Picard's oratory at the end of his grand argument.
Well, that's the question you have to answer. Your Honor, a courtroom is a crucible. In it, we burn away irrelevancies until we are left with a pure product, the truth, for all time. Now, sooner or later, this man, or others like him, will succeed in replicating Commander Data. Now, the decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius. It will reveal the kind of a people we are, what he is destined to be. It will reach far beyond this courtroom and this one android. It could significantly redefine the boundaries of personal liberty and freedom, expanding them for some, savagely curtailing them for others. Are you prepared to condemn him and all who come after him to servitude and slavery? Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits. Waiting. You wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Grant! Yeah, that is, I mean, you know, we talked about that a bit before. Just whenever Patrick Stewart gives a speech, there is, I think, something in all nerds that you just, like, settle in your chair and just, like, here it comes.
Let it wash over you.
Gives me chills just thinking about it.
Yeah, this is what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That and Riker, of course.
Well, yes.
All right, well, as is Ape Law, I guess, because we have a great episode, we also have to have one that's a Wesley episode.
Oh, so. God.
I don't even think this one was terrible. I think it was kind of middle of the road for season two, but...
I don't think it was terrible, but I do think it had some, like... Well, I'll get to it.
I think comparing it to what came before, it just isn't fair.
Yeah.
I think if we'd seen this after The Outrageous O'Connor or The Child, we probably would have liked it.
Mm. No, I don't think so.
All right, that's fair. Well, Matt, why don't you tell us all about what you insist on calling the Dolphin?
Yes, the Dolphin. Okay. So the Enterprise is transporting this diplomat and her governess to some planet where the diplomat is to be made queen or mayor or something.
Mayor!
The diplomat's a pretty 16-year-old girl named Celia, and the governess is an awful, squeaky-voiced old woman in one of those full-body, except-for-where-the-face-pokes-out robes that Kai Winn always wore, which gives me a bad taste in my mouth as soon as I see it. Wesley spots the girl, falls immediately in love, and talks to Geordi and Worf about how to court her, because those two are the perfect go-to for relationship advice. Meanwhile, Kai Winn finds out that someone on the ship has the flu and turns into bug-eyed Chewbacca to try and kill him. She and Worf bare-teeth at each other, and she backs down and is confined to quarters. Yeah. Wesley dates Celine on the holodeck, and she is sad because she has to be mayor and not have fun forever. Kai Winn loses her shit when she finds out Celine is dating, and Picard forbids Wesley to see her, and Wesley, overcome by his first feelings of young love, sits in his room and plays solo Battleship. Eventually, Celine, tired of waiting for a romantic gesture, comes to him and they have awkward makeouts until Kai Winn slash Chewbugga shows up. Celine turns into Skeletor's minion Beast Man. The two wrestle a bit, and then they both back down. Wesley's creeped out that Celine isn't human, but he eventually comes around. Kai Winn decides Celine is an adult and leaves to go live on the moon, which is where my mom told us we did with our first dog when we had to have it put down. Celine leaves to go be mayor, even though she doesn't want to. Wesley goes back to his quarters to play more solo battleship. In summation, the Enterprise successfully makes a 3-hour trip. Wesley has a girlfriend, and I desperately try to remember that episodes like Measure of a Man exist. Also, I have no idea what a dolphin is.
Well, Bob, you could help on this one, yes?
Oh, do you really want me to do the well actually explanation?
Yes.
It's a French word, right?
The dauphin is, I believe it was the French prince out of potentially more than one prince, the one that was going to become the king.
Ah.
Yeah.
So she's a prince.
A little prince.
Or princess.
Right. Matt, one point of order. They didn't actually wrestle at all. They just stare at each other.
Yeah, that's right. I thought they wrestled. They didn't.
Yeah. No,
there wasn't even that like little bit of action.
That would have been nice.
The costumes would have fallen apart.
The thing is, those suits like weren't. We'll get to that. Your good thing, bad thing.
Yeah. Okay. It's actually my quote, but there's a scene where Guinan and Riker are showing Wesley how to flirt, and it just becomes completely awesome.
Yep.
This episode and the last one, like I was saying, really got me to like Guinan.
It stops becoming about Wesley in about 5 seconds.
Yep.
In fact, we usually put the quote after all this, but let's just throw it here now since we're already talking about it.
All right.
Guinan, I need your help. Could you step over here a minute?
Sounds simple enough.
Now, first words out of your mouth are the most important. You may want to start with something like this here. You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. But that might not work.
Yes. Yes, it would.
You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become.
Commander?
Or that you might think that was a lie.
Maybe I do think it's a lie.
And you think I'm not sincere?
I didn't say that. There's nothing wrong with the line. It's like a knock at the door.
Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
I don't think this is my style. Shut up, kid. Tell me more about my eyes.
And yeah, there's just that great moment where, unfortunately, it starts to be visual, where they cut to Wesley rolling his eyes almost immediately.
Yep.
And they just completely, and their body language is like, they were turned toward him and they sort of turn away from him.
And they're just like looking straight at each other.
Yep. And it's just like, it's become about the game now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which, and I love, that's one of the things I like about the whole Riker as a horn dog thing is what makes him different than Kirk is everyone knows it. And all of his, like, he doesn't take advantage of anyone.
Nope.
It's all people like this who operate on the same level as him. And it's a challenge and they like the game. They like the back and forth. And
yeah.
He charms them into it. It's not just like where Kirk, you know,
I'm the captain. You have to sleep with me.
Yeah, it never feels like Riker's friends are gonna have to cover up for him later.
Yeah, where we got that vibe about Kirk all the time.
Yep.
I mean, you know, like we mentioned once or twice, the fact that his best friend is a doctor had to figure in some of those scenarios. And your bad thing?
Here's why Wesley sucks. Okay. In the entirety of this episode, he never does anything to fight for this girl. He spends the last half hour of the episode in his quarters moping and playing 3D battleships. The girl comes to him. The girl fights Kai Winn for him. Wesley just sits around, mopes, cowers away from the Chewbacca monster, and does whatever he's told. This could have been a good opportunity to develop his character a little bit, you know? Let him go up again. Let him fight against Picard for trying to tell him what to do. You know, he's a teenager, friend love for the first time. Let him take the girl. Give us some kind of conflict. Like, this episode is just, we delivered a girl to a planet in 3 hours. It worked out really well. It just, There's so much potential for Wesley to have done something in this episode, and instead nothing happens. We get...
I agree with you, but I think he is acting in character.
I think he's acting in character, and I think Celia does a good job. Like, I like you were saying about how Celia being, like, the one who actually does stuff is a nice change. But we don't see her ever again. We have to see Wesley every week. He needs to be doing things to get us to be interested in him.
The standard cliche is that the boy will fight to get to see the girl, and what I was saying is it's a nice turnaround to see the girl actually disobeying and coming to the boy. Mm-hmm. And because Wesley is so concerned with his future career in Starfleet and so concerned with impressing daddy figure Picard, I feel like it's totally in character. But you're right. Writing him in character makes this a very boring story.
That's right. If he doesn't rebel,
then there's no, you know, who cares? Mm-hmm.
And I mean, honestly, nothing happens in this episode.
True.
Like, we have this sort of mysterious old woman on the ship who's, like, super overprotective, but, like, there's no conflict or anything. She fucking 360s at the end when Celine turns into...
180,
man. Whatever. She 180s at the end when Celine turns into Beast Man and they, like, stare at each other.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, now I see that you've become a real adult and I can leave forever. Goodbye.
No, I don't know. First of all, I don't think Star Trek has any place doing teen love stories.
For
teen love, please see the entirety of television. We already have that. We don't need Star Trek to do that. But that said, you know, it's important to show Wesley's first love. But yeah, you're right. Because of the box that they've built around his character, it didn't make it a very interesting story.
Yeah. Also, he gets super snippy when he finds out she's not a humanoid.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm. That shit is racist. Yeah, you're racist, Wesley.
Like, 2 or 3 weeks in a row, he's said something sort of racist against, you know, non-humans.
Yeah. That's really weird. Is it excusable that Wesley is not, you know, as advanced as the rest of human society just because he's underage? I mean, as far as, like, genes dictate, you know, goes...
I don't know, because, I mean, we always had Bones making, you know, jabs at Spock, and of course, the read on that always was that he, you know, he really loved him and he was just giving him a hard time.
Right? Yeah!
But there was a lot of humans are great and aliens are not great in the original series, too.
Hmm. Yeah, but this is like, with this, it's like Wesley being, I've never been more in love with anyone ever in my entire life. Wait, you're not human? Ew.
Yeah.
Right. Humans have to be nice to other humans, but they don't have to be nice to aliens.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I've always liked story, but then again, Gene was against the plot of Star Trek VI being that the humans were anti-Klingon.
Mm.
Like he did not approve of that at all. Hmm. So I don't know. I honestly don't know. Shockingly, he was probably very inconsistent about that.
What a shock! Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like. Not that I want to make excuses for it or anything, but maybe Wesley's issue was that she wasn't honest.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I guess.
You know, you could have told me that's pretty important detail.
Like yeah, that, but they never address it like that. It's always like, well,
no, what I'm trying to.
Yeah, make no, excuses. I can. Yeah.
Bob, what about you? Good thing, bad thing?
Good thing. I think I have to agree with Matt here. The awesome moonlighting dialogue between Horn Dog Breaker and Guinan.
Oh yeah,
that was pretty damn awesome.
Yep.
And
bad thing.
The bad thing. I don't know. Everything else probably. if I had to pick something, I'd say the bad plastic lemur heads.
Yeah.
Or Wesley being a real jerk.
Also, yeah. That was actually my bad thing as well. I'll just jump to that because I don't know. Picking one specific thing, like I said, yeah, it wasn't interesting to watch Wesley, but I feel like he was acting in character. I just feel like it's not a good thing to frame a story around to watch someone who just does what he's told.
Mm-hmm.
My bad thing was actually the horrible monsters as well. That just, mm-hmm. And you know, this show can do decent looking aliens. They've done.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a few already, but they just, yeah. Not good. It looked like Alf at one point.
Yeah,
the bodies
No, they did. You're right.
The big masks were like, I don't know. They looked like giant lemur heads, but they didn't move at all. And
they had googly eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, they did have googly eyes.
Not cool. My good thing was there's this great vibe, and it's only there briefly, and then there's like a line or two at the end where Worf sees that the old woman can turn into this big imposing monster thing. Goofy looking, yes, but still big and imposing. Mm-hmm. And her protective instincts and all that. And he sees that they're sort of kindred spirits. They're both, you know, like protectors and warriors and that kind of thing. And just Worf's respect for her is a nice, subtle character. Like, Worf didn't have much to do in either of these episodes. And I like it when a character that only gets a minute or two of screen time still gets something that fleshes out the character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a nice hint of Worf's, you know, like, we may be at odds, but I respect you. We're, you know, we're not so different, you and I. Like,
in another reality, you and I could have been
friends. Well, and the last thing she says to him is, you know, I hope someday we can fight on the same side. But that's like the ultimate compliment to Worf. Like, that is something you know, if you respect someone as a warrior and they say, next time I hope we can fight together, like, that's, yeah, all right, she likes me. I liked that. Again, I like that Worf hasn't had much to do the last couple of weeks, but they gave him a little something, and Dorne completely nailed it.
Awesome.
Which I always like. It's like the Chief O'Brien thing. It's like Chief O'Brien doesn't get much to do, but when he's there, the actor is great, and the writers have a handle on who he is, and you still get a little something to help define who he's supposed to be, and that's cool.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
I noticed that I'm sure it's come up a lot, but there was a lot of lazy writing as far as like describing alien stuff in this one.
Yeah, that's a standard Star Trek thing.
Everything is like other planet adjective Earth thing, like, you know, Thalian, yep, chocolate mousse, Sarian, yep, encephalitis, yep, Rigelian dick bats.
You know, like Earth dick bats, only from Rigel.
Yes. The Rigelian dickbats are the worst. Their entire bodies are just dicks.
Well, which Rigel are they from, though? There's so many Rigels.
All Rigel.
Wow.
Every Rigel has its own species of dickbat.
Well, that's why they kept showing up in the animated series, I suppose.
Yeah, they got onto a ship and, like, got spread across the galaxy.
Man, I miss the dickbats, you guys. If I could have 5 minutes with J.J. Abrams, I would spend 4.5 kissing his ass and the other 30 seconds imploring him to include dick bats in the next movie.
So, have you thought about dick bats?
What's a dick bat? Well, here, I'm glad you asked.
Glad you asked. No, I'd even be fine with, like, them showing up in the comic series now.
Oh, that'd be fine. Just only for, like just off in the distance, like flying in the sky. You don't have to fight them.
A flock of dick bats.
Yes, just flying by while someone's talking.
That, oh, they're doing Return of the Archons. That's a shitty episode. They can make it into Return of the Dick Bats.
Turnabout Dick Bat.
Praise Landru.
Spock's Dick Bats. Yeah, I don't
know. I Dick Bats.
Yeah. For the world is hollow and I've touched the Dick Bats.
Oh, honey, don't touch your Dick Bat. Not in public.
At one point, the old woman, you know, she can turn into a little Alf-looking thing. She can turn into a big Chewbacca bug. And she can also turn into, I don't know how to say her name, Shelley from Twin Peaks, the actress.
Oh, Madgett Emick?
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
Very, very attractive woman.
Indeed.
And she chooses most of the time to stay in this old woman form.
Yep.
You can be a hot chick, you can be a fuzzy monster, or you can be...
You can be a smaller fuzzy monster.
Or you can be an old woman. And you choose old woman. Really? Huh. All right.
Well, I mean, she did talk about how Worf underestimated her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. Like, it's the whole Yoda thing. It's the whole appearing to be, you know...
Judge me by my size, do you?
Small and weak, but actually being, you know, strong. I get that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
When she pulls her lightsaber on him.
Right.
There's an arm on the floor.
This is another episode where it's like the other one, Loud as a Whisper, where there's some key fact about a person they're transporting and they don't know it. Like, at the time they didn't know that Reva was deaf. Mm-hmm, and this time they don't know these guys are shapeshifters. It seems like they should know these things before they bring them on their ship.
You guys could just do, like, 5 minutes of research.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if these guys are a species of shapeshifters, that seems like something the Federation should know.
If you just told us, we wouldn't have had to gone through this episode.
Well, yeah, we could have just skipped it.
No, I mean, but I really don't think that would have been a major... Like, you could have still told this story without that plot point. That's not a big deal. They're shapeshifters. Okay. You could still show them shapeshifting, you know, when dangerous stuff happens or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Like, I guess they were trying to set it up as, like, a surprise, because... First you have, like, Celine talking. There's just some girl in a room all of a sudden.
Yeah, but since I already knew, it just didn't do anything. I don't know. That's one of those times we try to go into this, you know, not knowing, like, trying to pretend we don't know what happens later, but it's hard. It's hard sometimes. I've seen this episode. I know that.
See, I hadn't seen this episode, and so this girl shows up, and it's just like, oh, who's this? Hmm. Oh, it's no one came with her, so probably... She's
so you even you hadn't having not seen it, you'd even figured it out quickly.
It was not hard to figure out.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But it wasn't... Which probably means that that she's a shapeshifter too.
Yeah.
Which blah blah blah.
Right.
And it wasn't even really critical to the plot. I mean, aside from prompting Wesley being a dick, it you know it had nothing. There wasn't even really a plot in this episode at all, aside from Wesley like falling in love and then being annoyed.
Well, and I can totally see the writers sort of breaking season two and saying, okay, we need this, we need this. We should have Wesley's 15 now. We should probably have him fall in love for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see them planning that, but they should have done it better than this.
Yeah, or at least giving us a B plot or something.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Actually, no, giving us an A plot. This was the B plot.
Exactly.
This also falls into the trap of a lot of episodes. It usually is Counselor Troy, but not always. Of the Enterprise is on a mission that takes 3 to 5 days, and during that brief time, someone falls in love.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I don't buy it. It takes a little longer than that to you know, form that bond.
Well, and the whole reason it took any length of time at all is because Geordi broke the engines and he had to fix them.
Oh, yeah. They would have just warped right to the other planet immediately otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah, problem solved.
Geordi's like, oh, you need a couple days with this girl. Oops, I dropped my wrench. There you go, Wes. Go do your thing.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. This episode doesn't even take place over a couple of days. This is in the course of a day.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Most the actual, the fixing the engines took a couple of hours, and then the trip itself took a couple of hours.
Yeah. I wasn't paying that close attention, to be honest with you.
I was fascinated by anything that was not Wesley's ass.
Yeah, let's talk about Wesley's ass.
We have to.
Fortunately, we don't see anything close to even the contours of his buttocks, but the outfit.
Much appreciated, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we got our cover art now, anyway.
Oh, no,
there's his uniform is not made the same way as the others are. There is a clear separation between the top and the bottom. And
some codpiece.
Yep.
And in the back, there's a zipper or something that keeps the pants up, and it's undone.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like his butt flap is hanging out. Like his, you know, he came back from the outhouse and he forgot to zip up. I mean. Putting aside the obvious jokes and whatever, it's bad costume design, and this director really fixated on having the camera at about waist level for no apparent reason.
I think it would have been fine if they hadn't, like, kept the camera.
Yeah.
At that. Like,
yeah.
There were, like, tons, like you were saying, like, waist level or even slightly below, where we want to, like, look up the characters and give them this big hero shot.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is fine in an episode that calls for that dramatically, but there was no call for it here. It was just sort of arbitrary.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just
make this interesting somehow.
Yeah.
So we'll show Wesley's ass. Yeah, that'll do the trick.
But it wasn't just Wesley. Like, they did it to Riker, too. And it wasn't doing him any favors, either. It's just an unflattering angle for everyone.
Maybe the director was just 6 inches high.
Inch high private eye?
Yes.
What else? Anything?
I got nothing.
I think we hit all the... talking points about the dolphin.
Oh,
the
she
dolphin.
she liked chocolate, so there was I don't know, some sort of Counselor Troy.
Yeah, but Counselor, angle. That would have given her a minute to do something.
And she can't have that.
No, actually, Counselor Troy loving chocolate is a defining character trait that hasn't appeared yet. I don't think.
Oh. Yeah, we'll have to mark that when it does happen.
But it does, I think, in season, like, maybe later this season or season three, and then it never goes away. Like, oh, well, Counselor Troy can sense emotions and she likes chocolate. That is all that there is about her.
Yep.
Oh, and she has some problems with her mother. The end.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, boy. All right, Bob. Well, great for you to be here during the first, you know, truly great episode here.
Yep.
Thanks.
I mean, you know, not that this is, you know, you're really saving me work since I didn't have to do any summarizing this week. But what the hell? I'm going to pass this off as a late birthday present. So, happy birthday.
Much,
here's Measure of a Man.
Actually, that reminds me. Why did you want to pick the Dauphin at first?
Oh, well, I wanted to be on the show that had Measure of the Man, but I didn't want to actually do it myself because I thought it would be too hard to make something humorous out of it. But, I'll leave that for the audience to judge whether I succeeded or not.
Oh, I think you did.
Oh, yeah, I think you did.
We left, so, you know, who cares about them?
Oh, all right.
No, that was my fault. We sort of miscommunicated there, but you pulled it out. So it
was fine. No worries.
And I didn't have to do any work.
And that was the best of all.
Yep. Next week, same deal. We have a guest coming, so Matt doesn't have to write a summary. So,
hooray!
That's good. Oh, and we're doing the Royale, which actually was Bob's first choice.
With cheese.
Yep. Oh, boy, is it. So Flonk will be joining us then.
Is he doing the Royale?
I don't know. I will have to ask him.
All right.
I'm not sure. I think so. Which leaves me then with Contagion. I don't even know which one that is.
I think it has something to do with the bug.
Oh,
it has
good.
Something to do with contagions.
Well, thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
It's this encyclopedic knowledge that the reason I keep you guys around.
Well, I mean, after you've done something for so long, I mean, the stuff just pops
second
into your
nature,
head.
Really.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime I can help.
Yeah. So, that's next week. Then we have just another episode with two more shows. And then the following week, we are recording live from the Emerald City Comic Con.
Woohoo!
In front of an audience. So that should be fun. We've gone over this for a while. We're not doing any sort of special thing. We're just going to do an episode. We're going to be recording episode 73 in front of an audience. It is Pen Pals and Q-Who, which first appearance of the Borg. So that's kind of cool.
Excellent.
That should be fun. So
be there.
I will. Look forward to that. Yes, you should. You should definitely be there if you can.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, that's all from us, and we will be here next week. Matt, say your thing.
See you, folks.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, copyright 2012. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.